Hare Krishna. You probably noticed we have a guest here. This is Harinam Chintamani. And I invited her to come on the show. And I thought her wisdom and inquisitiveness about this topic would be relevant and beneficial to everyone. So we want to welcome her.
Thank you.
Thank her for coming. And welcome Bhakta Patrick Pallavi Lavananda, Bhaktin Carol, Kremlin, Bruce, and others, too numerous to mention, who have not signed into chat yet. And you remember last week we were speaking about not focusing on the negative, not focusing on the idea of I don't want to offend devotees, but focusing on positive ways to act. And we also spoke about a letter in which Prabhupada wrote, in which he recommended that if you need to correct someone, then you should do what? You should be above suspicion, and you should act in an exemplary way. Otherwise, you have no really grounds to correct anyone. We were talking a little bit last week about what to do if we need to correct people, because we haven't talked about that yet. So sometimes, you know, I'm talking about being nice to everybody and appreciating everybody and serving them, and then someone's thinking, but what if this person needs to be corrected? So what do we do? So Prabhupada said, before you can correct, you have to be exemplary. And then he said, if you're exemplary, then people are more inclined to hear from you. Or maybe they'll just change by seeing your example. So you all remember last week? Or is that too far back to remember that? Sometimes I can't even remember what I said, but I think that's what I said. And so tonight, Mother Harinam Chintamani is going to lead us by asking some questions about practical dealings amongst us. Like very, very practical questions about getting along. So you'd like to ask your question?
I feel like I'm on the hot seat. Actually, we were chanting in the temple, and I'm going to put him on the hot seat. And then he said, I can't think of what I'm supposed to. I had a whole idea of what I was going to do tonight. And it's blank. I'm just chanting and I'm praying. And said, why don't we just do this together? And I was thinking, oh, it's the month of Kartik, the month of Damodar. It's opportunity to offer service. So I'm not somebody who's coming with answers. Actually, what I told him, I said, I think this is very interesting that Krishna made this arrangement, because I'm dealing with a situation right now that when we talk about Vaishnava Aparad, and we really want to go deep in the holy name, so we really want to see each person as part of Krishna. We have the theory, but how practically does that play out when we are in very close circumstances, either with a partner, a friend, a family member, a roommate, whatever? It may be Krishna's arranged that you know, we're triggering each other because somebody sounds like their critical parent they had when they were children. And, you know, so we can be well wishers of each other and we can have the philosophy. And then sometimes we can still feel some tension, some anxiousness, some feelings of why does that person continually do that? And how do we get to the other side of that practically? So then my dear God brother said, well, if you're willing to get out there and teach something, then maybe you can learn something. So I thought, okay, you know, I'm willing to get out here in front of the universe and say, you know, it's like being at one of those, you know, AA meetings or something, you know, I'm an offender and these are all the offenses that I commit and here I am, you know. So I thought, well, okay, Krishna, you know, I'm willing to talk about that a little bit. And I know that one of the things I've been doing recently, because I have that situation, is I'm looking at it from several different angles, and I'm realizing something as well, and that is that for some of us, if we've had maybe difficult childhoods, we think that Krishna consciousness is about being perfect, and that can just really be a strain on one's devotional service on a day-to-day level, because we can't be perfect. There's no perfection in this world. The Bhagavad Gita says every endeavor is covered by fault, and even our endeavors to try to see the good in each person and each day, try to keep the examples of the saintly people who we admire, either from history or within the circle in which we live, or devotees we've heard about, and by reputation we would like to emulate that in some way, and we fall short. And perhaps, you know, we've had parents or authorities who've been very heavy with us if we ever did anything wrong, and so we have that person on our shoulder. But Krishna is a very magnanimous and loving God, and he's very forgiving. So I'm beginning to realize that if when circumstances arise, which I feel that I've fallen short, that I don't have to go into a tremendous guilt and, you know, oh, you're so bad, and because it doesn't help. But, you know, but to go into prayer, and I was appreciating, Mahatma Prabhu was talking about how really looking at the positive instead of absorbing in the negative. So one of the things I've been doing is I imagine Paramatma in the heart of whoever I'm interacting with, if I feel there's some tension, some difficulty, and I put a garland on the Lord in the heart. And then when I feel that there's been any kind of breakthroughs, sometimes I'll put a flower at Krishna's feet, you know, just like, thank you very much because I'm asking you for help. And sometimes I'm praying to Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur and different personalities who I know had that mood of humility and who had wonderful qualities. And I know, and I can see that it is a false perception that I have, and that I'm, you know, acting on something that isn't truth, but still the triggers are very, very deep right now. So then I found that I needed to be honest. And sometimes it's very difficult to be honest, you know, with somebody. Maybe we don't want to admit we're feeling like this, we don't want the other person to feel bad, or we don't want to admit we're not as advanced as we wish we were. That can happen. So, but it seems to be very helpful to say, well, you know, I'm so sorry that when this happens, this is bringing this and this up. And then the other person was very surprised, and they said, well, I wasn't thinking that at all. I'm really surprised that you were feeling this way. And then, you know, we were well-wishers of each other, so we're both trying to work to the other side. And so I know that, St. Francis of Assisi said, seek to understand. You probably mentioned that in one of the 11 weeks.
Not directly, but...
You know, we all want to be understood, but we can seek to understand first. And there's a form of communication which is nonviolent communication. And it's very much communication in the mode of goodness. And I know a number of friends of mine have taken courses in it. And it means that one honors each person as part of God, and one understands that everybody has a desire to love, to be loved, has a desire for acceptance, has a desire to feel safe. You know, there's just certain human needs that are common to our family, or, you know, universal family. So we can pray to get to the other side of whatever's bothering us, and then try to hear the subtext, because everyone communicates on the basis of needs. And so often that kind of friction and anxiousness and difficulty is arising because some need isn't being met. Somebody's feeling unsafe, someone's not feeling love, someone's, you know, there's different needs that we have as humans. Anyway, so those are some of the things that were coming to mind as I'm kind of working on the situation, and things are coming up, and I would like to come to a higher level than where I am, and I'm appreciating this opportunity to do so.
And also, everyone out there, you can also participate in solving these, or answering these questions, or having this discussion. And Harinam Chintami brought up a lot of points.
You want to address them?
One of the points, I think one of the most significant points that you brought up is about the triggers. and about seeing the same situation in a different way. Mm-hmm. So you rightly explained that we all have certain needs, and those needs which we have are, they're there for various reasons. Maybe we didn't get them growing up, or maybe we got them growing up and we still want them, or we didn't get them and therefore we need them. And in relationships, we expect people to fulfill those needs. But of course, the people don't know necessarily what the needs are. You know, I have a god brother, and he really likes to be encouraged by senior devotees, and he likes to be appreciated. And if he's encouraged and appreciated by them, then he really works hard, and he's really happy. And we saw Prabhupada always encouraged us. He always said, "You're sincere. I'm very pleased with what you're doing." And he knew we needed that. We needed to know that he was pleased. But a lot of our friends, even very close friends, and even loved ones, don't always know what we need. So they just go about what they're doing, and what they're doing can disturb us because it didn't fulfill our need, although they didn't know what that need was, and they have no idea.
So what do you suggest doing for that situation? Telling people what the needs are?
Well, that could be one, but another way of looking at it, another possible way of dealing with it, is when you understand the needs, then you understand, well, I had expectations that were unmet mm-hmm. by a person who had no idea mm-hmm, mm-hmm. what I needed, so they didn't do anything wrong. And if I didn't have those needs, it wouldn't have bothered me. And, mm-hmm, and because mm-hmm. I have those needs, it bothered me. So it's about me, not about my needs.
Always. It's always. And that's another thing I was thinking about, listening to a lot of lectures, Srimad Bhagavatam lectures from the VIHE. And it's so powerful that constantly hearing. I have to encourage everyone out there. I don't know what your daily schedules are, but constantly hearing from the realizations and just straight scripture, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, is so potent because so much comes back during the times that we're working things out in our day-to-day life, because we're trying to live a spiritual path. Basically, we're living as if we were the mood of a person in a monastic lifestyle, in a secular lifestyle. I mean, we have a very high level of commitment within Krishna consciousness, where we really are serious, you know, that all of our interactions count, everything counts. It's part of higher consciousness. So then I was thinking today about what it really means to, something I've been praying about, to open the heart up to the love that the representatives of God and God have for us. And I think that when we can accept that love and really feel it, we actually can be very satisfied by that and not have as many needs. And the fact is that because we came to this material world, we came here wanting to be the center, right? Wanting to be Krishna. So we really are expecting that everybody is here to fulfill our needs. So that's a big revelation. When all of a sudden we wake up, we go, oh, everybody is not here for me. Everything doesn't center around me. So that's quite a maturing process for a soul. You know, just like a little kid, there's different levels of maturing as a child grows up. But this is quite a level of maturing when we actually realize that everything here and everyone here and every living being is not here just to satisfy me. You know, and that's something that I realized in this situation. I thought, well, at what point am I going to stop asking that this other person do everything the way I like it? You know, is there a point? And so why not just start now? Why not just start now? And I know that I like to read saints sometimes of different faiths, and there's one who I like in particular, and that's Saint Therese of Lisieux in the Catholic faith. So she was known as the little flower and the saint of the little way, and so she would tolerate, you know, sometimes a nun would really clack her beads during chanting a rosary. It was so loud. She was very, very sensitive, and she just wanted to scream. And she really prayed a lot, because mostly to get, I think, to the other side of things that are very hard for us and very deep requires prayer and mercy. I just don't think we can do it on our own.
It's a very good point. Well, another thing that's helped me a lot is to look at a problem with another person, not as a problem with that person, but as a problem with my relationship with Krishna, because of the contamination in my heart that's not allowing me to have a positive relationship or to see the negative in that person or to become disturbed by it. So it's just...
So it's an opportunity to grow.
And see, okay, Krishna, you sent this person. And now, what, like for example, what Krishna tells us, what are the qualities of a devotee and how a devotee should live? It's in the 12th chapter of the Gita. My devotee is this, this, and this. And then there's so many stories in the Bhagavatam that illustrate how a devotee acts. And in the commentaries there, this is how a pure devotee acts, meaning this is we should follow in their footsteps. This is how we should act also. So when we're aware of that and we're not acting that way, we can think, okay, by not acting that way, this is now clouding or in some way getting in the way of my relation with Krishna. And by acting properly towards this person, Krishna is pleased. I'm removing the anartha of the dealing with that person, which that anartha is getting in the way of my relation with Krishna. So there were these paradoxical commandments. You're familiar with those, you know. If you're nice, people will be jealous, or they'll try to take advantage, but, you know, be nice anyway. If you're successful, people will get jealous, be successful anyway.
Mother Teresa said that.
Yeah, she had that hanging in her in her place. Mm-hmm. And then someone added another line to that and said, in the end, it's not about you and them anyway, it's about you and God. So
I thought that was hers.
No, it was written by a man named Keith something when he was 19 years old. He was like a youth counselor, and he wrote that for the other counselors.
I thought that was hers. Thank you very much. I think it was the most important part of the whole thing.
So, but it wasn't hers. It was written by him, but he didn't write the last line. Someone else wrote it. Akura, remember, if some of you have saw Akura on the show, Akura actually wrote the man who wrote it to find out who wrote the last line. And he said, I didn't write it. Someone else put it in. So I always thought that the last line was kind of the... really for devotees, you know. It's like someone put that in for us, because it's, you know, we're trying to make, we may not have perfect relations with everybody, that may not be the ultimate goal, but the ultimate goal is to be purified within our heart and not be an envious, jealous, angry, resentful person. So
right.
it's not about you and them, it's about you and Krishna, and that becomes the impetus. Okay, Krishna, mm-hmm, I'm gonna, mm-hmm, this person I may feel is wrong, there's no doubt about it, or whatever, but I'm not going to go there, because that's just going to take me down into the mode of ignorance, or at least passion and probably ignorance. I'll become angry, resentful, whatever. So now I'll be dwelling in ignorance. So in order to reach you, I at least have to be in goodness. So by staying in goodness, which means seeing things, as you said, seeing the situation differently, and then you react differently when you see differently. So I'm reacting to what I'm seeing, which is the negative, as opposed to the positive.
I think it also points up how internal this process is of spiritual life. It's not showy. Nobody sees the work that you're doing inside. That's another reason that it's between the soul and God. You know, you could, and that's why I guess it's very difficult to tell. Sometimes somebody could not. It could, you know. Sometimes when we're working through these things, it isn't so pretty. Sometimes. No, but it's, you have to, I think that only a person who's on an elevated platform themselves, like Srila Prabhupada, or somebody who's clear in the heart, can really understand the struggles that somebody else is going through. One of the books I read, A Right to Be Merry, had to do with cloistered nuns. And so they were saying, you know, you have just a small group of people, they're going to be together for many, many years, and how do you know that this nun, who maybe her smile was strained, you know, during some interaction, but you don't know what her day was like. You know, she had maybe was doing all of her chores with a migraine headache, and so many things had gone wrong, and she was really being challenged, and she was really struggling, and that half smile or whatever it appeared could have been really superhuman given everything that she was dealing with. And maybe somebody who wasn't as committed to the spiritual path might have really acted a lot differently. So that's also there, you know. We really, it's nice if we can give each other the benefit of the doubt. I mean, at least for us living within a spiritual community where people are trying to greater and lesser degrees, but we can't really judge that, you know, where somebody is.
I think also another thing. I was just dealing with this lady in my business, and I said this happened, and she said no, this happened. I said no, this happened. She said no, this. It was like okay, we're going nowhere, and I realized by dealing with her that she doesn't have the capacity to just stop and say, well, maybe it happened another way, and maybe there's another way to deal with this. And just, she doesn't have that capacity. It's just impossible. And so, for whatever reason, she doesn't have that capacity. She doesn't have it, and I have to accept that and say, okay, this is who she is, and this is what she is. And I'm sure from her point of view, she feels that she's doing the right thing. She's being honest. Everything's okay. I'm in the wrong. But she doesn't have the capacity to want to look or consider what I'm saying. All right, so that's so I see that many people in their heart feel that they're doing their best or doing the right thing. But according to who they are, it doesn't fit within our parameters of what's right.
Actually, Al Capone thought he was a real humanitarian. So yeah. Mostly everybody thinks, I'm right, and I'm, you know, doing things in a good way. Interesting how we rationalize, but that's wonderful if we can give somebody the benefit of the doubt, if we can let go.
There was a correspondence that Prabhupada had with a man who met a devotee, and apparently the devotee wasn't acting the way that man expected he should act. He was distributing books. And he was a little heavy-handed distributing the books and so forth. So the man actually wrote Prabhupada, and he was complaining about the devotee. And the main point Prabhupada was making was that this young man has given his life to Krishna.
Remember that.
And so, you know, the man is saying what he did is bad, the way his manners or how he dealt with me was bad. And then Prabhupada said, he's given his life to Krishna, and that's never bad. So please appreciate, you know, that he's done this. Yeah, that this is a total sacrifice. What he's doing, this is the greatest good. And please overlook the little defects, which in course of time he'll be able to overcome.
Yeah, I was just hearing today that the quality of a noble person is that he sees the good even where there isn't so much good. But a noble person will look for the good. And that really characterizes a very different society than what we're dealing with. You know, the television shows, the radio shows, the gossip. It's really about looking for everything that isn't good. And yet each person, as part of God, has some good. And when we're looking for the good, we can actually be touchstones that bring out the beauty and good in others. Sometimes I think people are like presents, really. You can't tell, like a book or a present, you can't tell what's on the outside. And when you have that, you know, feeling towards somebody, an openness, you know, really praying to see that person as part of God, and wanting to appreciate, then so many times there you can receive some revelation that you may not have received about that person and see them in such a very different way. Because especially in the kind of society we live in now, very often we don't have situations where people will reveal the jewels in the heart. But if we can become miners, you know, because everyone has jewels, the heart is a very deep, sacred place, you know. And I feel very blessed. Many times I've had people share things that were so precious, you know, and I thought, my gosh, you never see that person the same again. Like, one of our American writers, and I tend to mix it up, So I don't remember if it was Thoreau or Emerson, but I think Thoreau. But he said, if we knew the stories of our enemies, it would make us weep. You've heard that probably, yeah, yeah. You know.
Yeah, I have a nice story. You reminded me of this. I was at one point thinking about a devotee in a critical way, or maybe I don't know if critical is the best word, but I was just kind of disappointed in him, thinking that he was kind of lost his sincerity in Krishna consciousness, or he lost his just general determination and depth and so forth. And so practically, I think a few hours before I happened by chance to contact him, he wanted to talk to me, I was thinking that way. And then he revealed to me what he was thinking and the troubles and problems he was going through. And he revealed this huge depth of bhakti that I... And so I was like, I was listening to him talk, I was going, Krishna, you made this happen right now just to show us that don't ever second-guess devotees. Because as you say, there's always so much there that we don't always see and always know in terms of their sincerity and their depth of realization.
Yeah, we're like icebergs. I think all human beings are. There's this much on the surface and then there's miles underneath, you know, that the Lord, that God knows, you know, and we don't. But to be well-wishers of each other, Prabhupada used to sign his letters, "You're ever well-wisher." And I was praying, I would like to be a well-wisher. I mean, Krishna is the real friend of everyone. So if we're really, like you were saying, trying to please Krishna, and we're doing what we're doing because we know this is a child, this is Krishna's child, whatever age, whatever social strata, whatever religion, culture, whatever, this, you know, we're all Krishna's children in animal bodies, tree bodies, bird bodies, human bodies, you know, we're all Krishna's children, and every father wants to see his child, you know, cared for and protected.
Well, you know, we've been quoting this statement of Mother Teresa when she was asked, what's the problem in the world? You know what she said? Does anyone out there remember what Mother Teresa said? We have to engage you now. We've been neglecting all you poor folks out there. I'm sorry. Does anyone remember when Mother Teresa was asked, what's the problem in the world? What did she say? Please tell us if you remember. If you don't remember, I'm going to have to review all 10 past courses for you. Should I give you a hint? The problem in the world is that I am a... What did she say? Maybe I never told you, and that's why you don't know the answer. The problem with the world is that I am a sinner.
So she's taking basic... So she's saying that if all of us take full responsibility for what's in our own heart, then there is no problem.
And before I heard that, I always think, whenever I see a problem, I think, okay, if I were a pure devotee, how would I be affecting this situation that I'm criticizing now? And am I criticizing it out of frustration because I can't do anything to upgrade everyone's consciousness, uplift people, and therefore I see people acting in a way which is less than what I want them to act or expect them to act? And so I think it's a wonderful way of seeing it. You know, if I were, you know, the problem is I'm not a pure devotee. You know, if I were a pure devotee, would these problems be there? To the degree, they wouldn't, obviously wouldn't be there to the degree that they are. And maybe if they were, if I were a pure devotee, I wouldn't even be seeing those problems.
Has this been helpful, I wonder, for people who are watching, listening?
Uh-huh. Okay, everyone out there, what do you have to say about all this? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
We've got one thing that comments? Said, let her speak closer to the mic, so I'm sorry that we didn't have this.
That they're saying, I didn't hear a word she said.
Oh, dear. Could be.
Pallavi said, absolutely, yeah. This is like real world where the rubber hits the road, you know, when we're dealing with people. And as I said last week, Prabhupada had to deal with this all the time because it was so difficult for devotees to get along. You know, one time what Prabhupada said, it was... I was in Los Angeles in 1972, and there's a lot of friction between devotees, and it came to Prabhupada. And so he talked about it in the Bhagavatam class. I've almost moved off the camera. Well, I should move this way. Okay. Here I am. I'm back. I'm back in Krishna.com, Bill. So, okay, we're moving the camera. Dun, dun, dun. So, I totally forgot what I was saying. What did I say? What was I saying?
You were talking something about Srila Prabhupada, but you didn't say enough that I knew where you were going.
What about? Give me a hint.
He had to go through this every day.
Dealing with devotees, and then what was the next thing?
That's when we stopped and started fussing with the camera.
The senior moment here, folks.
The transcendental moment.
The sparks are, the cells have dislocated. So, I was saying, Prabhupada had to deal with these kinds of things.
You know, he always wanted to fan the spark. And so, one of the things that I always appreciated, because being around those who maybe are, we say neophyte, but basically we're saying that when we first come to the spiritual path, we're pretty rough around the edges, you know, and we get smoothed out little by little by little. And we usually lead with our false egos, and we lead with our defensiveness, and, you know. And Srila Prabhupada, we didn't have a lot of respect. He was a refined gentleman, a scholar, and a saint, none of which we knew how to deal with, given where we were coming from. But Prabhupada truly did see the good. And he did inspire us to come to a higher platform. And he always gave us responsibility and encouraged us. And he prayed for us. And I think that prayer, and you must have talked about prayer a lot, I'm sure. But praying for people is really so powerful. And it changes hearts. It does. You know, if one of the questions that we started off with is, well, what do you do if you see some situation where there needs to, perhaps to be something said? Well, in the class that we took on Vaishnava etiquette, the first thing we learned was, are you in a position? Are you a person in authority who should say something? Do you have a relationship with a person? Because if your intention is to change the situation and you really aren't positioned by your relationship or who you are as an authority to say something and have it heard, then really your words are going to be ineffectual. So then one of the things that I've been have started doing in the last couple of years is often we'll see situations that we think somebody needs to know about this quick. So then I'll actually pray. You know, I'll actually go inside and I'll ask the Lord, I'll say, is this something you want me to do? Am I a piece of this being resolved? And maybe my part is very small, and I'm really trying to learn, I'm really working on learning what my part is, because we all have parts to play. You know, the Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna says, everyone follows my path in all respects. So anything that's happening is happening by the sanction of the Lord, and all of us have a part to play in certain situations. So I was trying to understand, what is my part here? If you want me to, so sometimes I'll negotiate a little bit so that I can have some clarity, and I'll ask, well, if you want me to say something, then I need an arrangement made with this particular person at a time that they would be open, and this is what I would offer. If this is what you would like me to do, then I'm sure you'll arrange this. And I might forget about it, and then all of a sudden, you know, who comes barreling around the corner, and there's nobody there, and we're just like, oh, okay. And then I just, you know, pray and just try to say whatever. So sometimes we can pray for somebody. We can go to an authority who, or a friend, maybe if this is a situation that's serious and, you know, there needs to be some intervention. There's many ways to deal with it. I think that mood indicates that we're coming from a place of service rather than a place of criticism. You know, so if it's in the mood of service, it's a different
Abraham Lincoln mood. Said, he who has a heart to help has a right. I don't know if one who has a heart to help has a something to criticize. I don't know if it was the right, but first we need the heart to help. That's the
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people will feel that you want to help. They're not going to feel like you're after them. They're not being condemned. They feel this person wants to help me.
Sometimes.
Oh, yeah. You can't win every situation.
Sometimes, no.
In the ideal world, they'll feel something. Or, you know, sometimes they won't. They won't appreciate it. And, you know,
and then sometimes 10 years, later on, yeah.
10 years later, they'll thank you for that.
10 minutes
you know.
Later, yeah. Could be really quick.
Okay, I thought I'd read something. I think it's right on the topic. As I was saying, I can't remember what I was going to say before, but if by the Lord's mercy, maybe I'll remember. But he's the source of knowledge and forgetfulness, especially at my age. Becomes more the source of forgetfulness. So, Prabhupada had to deal with a lot of this friction. It was a constant thing all the time. And he spoke a lot about getting along together. And one of the themes, and you were also mentioning this, is it wasn't like Prabhupada was being a psychologist and an expert in communications and so forth. He was just basically saying, be humble. You know, when it comes down to it. So I wanted to read something. I thought it's relevant. Still haven't remembered what I was going to say, but I guess it's not, I guess if it were important, Krishna would let me remember. It must not be that important. Okay. I have asked you all to address your God brothers as Prabhu. This Prabhu means boss. Yes, boss. So we say Prabhu. Prabhu means master. Prabhupada told us we can address one another as master, which is, you know, unusual for at least for those in America to address one another as master. Isn't it? I was in South Africa and the people that work for us, they address us as master. They were trained to address us. That's how they were, you know. During apartheid, that's how they addressed the white people as master. So I was kind of caught off guard. No one had ever addressed me as master. So, this Prabhu means master. If every one of us thinks his fellow worker as boss, there is no question of misunderstanding. The mistake is that being addressed as boss or Prabhu, one thinks himself as exactly Prabhu or boss. One should not forget himself as humble servant, even though one is addressed as Prabhu. So this is the real difficulty, because as one advances in Krishna consciousness, what happens? You get respect. And that respect can become an impediment. Or, if we're used to getting respect and someone disrespects us, it can be hard to deal with. Because how dare you disrespect me? Everyone else respects me. Because I'm respectable. So, we think, well, isn't it that as you advance in Krishna consciousness, you become more humble? Well, sometimes you become more proud. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says sometimes this is one of the anarthas that as a byproduct of bhakti, because as a byproduct of bhakti you get all this honor and then you become attached to it and you think you're better. So then it becomes hard to address one another as boss. One should not forget himself as humble servant even though one is addressed as Prabhu. One should never forget. Be humble in dealings. If every one of us would conduct our business in that spirit of Prabhu and servant, then there is very little chance of being misunderstood. Sometimes misunderstanding may take place, but it should be adjusted in a spirit of service attitude to the Prabhu. Now,
I once saw something. It was a video of Srila Prabhupada, and it really was quite amazing. Sometimes Krishna in the heart gives some revelation. So Prabhupada had delivered a lecture. The temple room was packed. You know, whenever Prabhupada would be anywhere, people would come from everywhere. And so they had hung on every word and clapped and Jai Srila Prabhupada. And so everyone had come just to see Srila Prabhupada, and he was sitting on the Vyasasan. And he had just delivered this powerful lecture, scholarly, quoting from so many different scriptures. And he took his glasses off, and he folded them, and put them in his lap, and looked up, like a little child, Like, what would you like me to do now? You know, just what's the program? I mean, all he had to do is say anything. I mean, he knew what the program, you know, we all were just there waiting. He could say anything. He could command all of us to do anything he wanted. And he was just there in the moment, whatever. You could see from moment to moment his surrender to Krishna, that there wasn't anything about being a controller. That was extraordinary.
You know, there's a story when all the devotees were in the airport and the airport authorities wanted them to move out. So one devotee, I think it was Rupanuga, got up, stood on a chair and said, "All ISKCON devotees must move out of the airport." And Prabhupada got up and started walking out.
He was the only one because everybody else sat down. Nobody else wanted to move because they didn't want to miss Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada very humbly got up and was the only one.
Okay. Now we have a question or a comment. We have a question. This is from Bruce. Bruce is asking, suppose one commits the mad elephant offense, Vaishnav aparad, against a devotee. One should beg forgiveness personally to that devotee, but an offense that was committed long ago and no longer has the association of that devotee, how can one be forgiven if that offended devotee is not present? You mean that devotee has left his body or you can't contact them? If that's the case, then you can still, I would say there's two things you can do. You could still ask that devotee in whatever form, wherever they may be, to forgive you and ask Krishna to forgive you for offending that devotee. I mean, what Prabhupada has taught is that the whole idea is to be remorseful. I've committed an offense. So the idea is you go to the devotee, you ask for forgiveness. If the devotee's not there, then you... Still, that remorse must be there, and in some way...
We can pray for devotees. We can do vratas for devotees we feel we've offended. You know, we can offer something to them, you know, an ekadasi or some rounds or just, you know, for their... because it will benefit them, you know. So we
service,
can do that.
Yeah.
We can offer service.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. Yeah, and that's one of the recommendations. Ask for forgiveness, do service. So that's a good point. There's some way you can serve that devotee, departed devotee, offer them prasadam or offer a feast in their honor. Bhakti and Carol asked, you want to read her question? Can you see it?
What about harshness when it's delivered within marriage relationships between devotees? Well, isn't that a big one?
We'll devote 10 more classes to answering that question.
It's difficult, isn't it? Relationships, it's so difficult. We talked about expectations, we talked about so many things. It just seems that we get these opportunities to come together, whether in temples or marriages or family, you know, that I feel I had a friend who dealt with stones. You've seen sometimes they'll take... agates, they'll be very polished in the way that's done in a tumbler. I don't know if you know this, but they put in grit, and first it's coarse grit, and then it's medium grit, and then it's fine. And sometimes I feel like we're in situations that it's just coarse grit and you're in a tumbler, and that's got to be really uncomfortable. So I'm not bypassing the seriousness of the question, because there's so many different levels of this. And I do know some friends of mine who were working a lot on their marriage, and they chose to take these classes in nonviolent communication, and it was very, very helpful for them. So I think in any relationship that lasts, there has to be good communication, and very often we don't know how to communicate with each other. We shut down. We didn't see it modeled. The man, when he gets upset, he walks out and leaves, and the wife is just left with all of her feelings and doesn't know what to do. So because this world is fraught with anxiety, we need to learn how to react to one another. We need to sit down in times where we're not stressed and we're not, because there's a lot of stresses. Money is a stress, and health is a stress, and there's just so many stresses. So we do really need to learn how to communicate with each other and find out, okay, if I push your buttons and or if you hear this, then what should we do and how can we get to the other side of it? And when we're well-wishers of each other and we work on these issues, you know, we can learn how to get through to the other side. Does it mean that nothing will ever happen, that we'll never be cross with each other? No, that's just part of life. But if we really are well-wishers of each other, there's a lot we can work through, don't you think?
I think one of my big realizations was how much harshness and anger hurts another person. And we are not always aware of that, because it's often a spontaneous emotional response. And when we become aware of how much pain we cause others by our anger, it can just turn it around and put us in the right frame of mind of how we are meant to deal with others in an affectionate way. I often tell, like your question, Bhakti and Carol, when people ask this to me, one answer I give, which seems very simplistic, to say the least, is I say, just be nice to one another. You say, well, that doesn't seem to be a very profound answer, like you don't know anything about relationships and marriage if you just say that. But it's based on the realization of how in intimate relationships, sometimes it's hard to be nice. That's a big challenge, just to be nice. Like you're nice with your friends, you don't see them that much, and then you come home and you're not nice with your... You ever hear, you know, that remark, well, he's so nice with everybody except me.
You know, I had that realization since working things out with... Because I've had different roommates, and it really hit me one day. I thought, we make an extra effort when we're out. Then we come home and we think, oh, I can kick back, and I can just show how rotten I feel and how miserable the day has been. And I realize, wow, the poor person who's there all the time has to get the brunt of this. That's not fair. Why, you know, why didn't I wake up with a smile in the morning? Why didn't I just practice, you know, smiling because everybody needs a smile. I actually read something about a boy who committed suicide, and in his note he said, if somebody smiles at me today, you won't read this note.
Wow.
And it really struck me, and I realized how many people look so grim and are so unhappy. And it started because I was going through a really, really hard time for a long time with sickness and many other things. And I caught my face in the glass one day going through some section in a store, and I was shocked because I didn't feel inside as bad as what I looked like on the outside, but I thought, if anybody sees my face, they're not going to be very happy. And I thought, gosh, I'm going to practice composing my features so that they're pleasant, because people are suffering so much. You know, does it really hurt to practice offering a smile? You know, so many people are lonely, and, you know, why not practice smiling a little bit more? You know, even if we don't feel like it, why not make that extra effort? And and it's hard to be miserable, like you were saying in one of the japa, you know, if we put our hands up in the air and we smile and we jump up and down, it's hard to be miserable. You know, so we can change our own state and be a touchstone to assist others as well.
Yeah, to accept that challenge, that how I'm thinking is affecting this person, this other person that I'm living with. Not just what I'm saying, but how I'm thinking, and if I change, they'll tend to change, they'll tend to respond. I think that's a big thing. Sometimes we only want to change when the other person changes. It's like tit for tat. Or I can't do this unless they do that. And so if we take the initiative, take the responsibility to be the person who's going to be the nicer, who's not going to be harsh, not going to be angry, I think that's...
And maybe we need to get a little extra help. Maybe we're not going to just be able to be nice. Maybe there's reasons that we can't be, or that the other person's angry, but if we can talk about it, you know, there's plenty of technologies that are available now to help us get from point A to point B, and it does show our sincerity in wanting to shift out of whatever our old patterns are that are not serving us in our relationships and in our relationship with God as well.
So, thank you.
We're done?
November 21st and 22nd in Alachua, Florida, right here. I'm doing my announcer voice because I think it's so funny to speak like an announcer. So I'll try it on you and see if it works. There's going to be, okay, let's pretend we're on, we're on some news show, okay? I never got to do this. So Harinam Chintamani is very good at this, and she's an actress also. She's going to judge my, how good I am as a, okay, we're at the news, okay.
I'm not going to judge.
So, November 21st, in Alachua, Florida, we are going to have a Grihastha couples retreat.
Wow, that sounds great. Should I get married before I come?
If you're not married yet, you better get married before the 21st. Otherwise, you cannot attend. Okay. And it's going to take you through Archana Siddhi and her wife, her husband. Archana Siddhi and her husband are doing this retreat. They've done it many, many times. It's been a great hit all over ISKCON. And it's going to deal with the very question that you have asked.
This is a very good opportunity. And if you have friends who haven't connected to this show, these two are dynamic. And I don't know anybody who hasn't taken their workshop, their retreat, and just come out and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. They both have had years of doing this kind of work. They're gifted, they're personal, and they're terrific. They're a terrific team, and they're good at what they do.
Yeah, that was as good as a TV show. That was like a professional ad. All right. And I don't know anything about it, but if you're interested, send me an email and I'll get you in contact with it, with the right people. Unfortunately, I didn't bring all that information with me, but just send me an email at mahat@aol.com. That's mahat@aol.com. And I'll give you more information on that. So now we have another question about how to raise kids. We could answer that in about 25 more sessions. And there's a devotee here developing a course called Parenting, Seven Principal Seeds of Parenting. But I can tell you one thing that Prabhupada said. He said, don't force your kids. Don't ever force them. At least he was referring to spiritual practice. He says they should want to do it on their own. They should see it as fun and enjoyable. And if you force them, then they may reject it. So, what do you need for raising children? Extreme tolerance, as deep as an ocean. The ability to listen, as you were talking about, nonviolent communication. However you deal with children, you can deal with adults. It works the same. When your kid comes home and says, I hate my teacher, your first reaction is, in our house, we don't hate teachers, right? But the nonviolent communication approach says, oh, you must be really angry. Your teacher must have done something. You try to let them talk about it and work it through rather than just, right, knocking them dead. You want them to talk about it. So you're angry at your teacher. Your teacher must have done something. You're helping them, you know, work through their understanding rather than just telling them, that's bad, you shouldn't feel this way, because that's how they feel, right? You're helping them work through their feelings and work out a better understanding of their relationship with their teacher. For example, how many days of the retreat? 2.5. Yes, you want to say something?
Well, just that Krishna consciousness means God consciousness, so the more conscious we are, then whatever we're doing, we're going to bring that consciousness there. And I think that they may want a show that has to do, because we have some terrific parents here who have a lot of experience raising children, and Ananga Manjari is one of them. You know, if there's enough interest, you know, you might want to do a show that has to do with raising children.
Well, there is a devotee that's going to be teaching a seminar, so I could ask him.
Yeah, that would be great.
Seven keys of, you'd probably love to do it. Of course, there's so many parenting philosophies, but and Prabhupada, I don't think he gave us. He said this amazing letter. This one devotee was the pujari in the temple. Pujari means she's taking care of the deities, and she was neglecting her child to some degree. And she wrote Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, "Your child is your deity, and your main service is to take care of your child." So another thing that I think is important is that, you know, we want our children to be a certain way. We want to train them a certain way. But they're likely going to be more influenced by what we're doing than what we're saying. So that's an important principle to always remember. You know, they're going to be what they see.
You know, Prabhupada's father, every time he would correct them, he would say, "I'm very sorry, but I'm your father, and I must correct you like this. Please forgive me." I mean, such a gentleman. So yeah. You know, imagine, so humble. We can't even relate to that in America. You know, that mood, really, so honoring. You know, so the more that we progress in our own spiritual life, the more honoring we'll be in all of our interactions with every living being. Yeah.
Well, that's a nice point. I think about this all the time, that we have very high ideals in Krishna consciousness. Very, very, not just moral principles, spiritual principles. So, and at the same time, we're dealing with these really down-to-earth, grungy issues of resentment, of guilt, of not getting along. And it almost seems like a paradox that if we're living a life of a devotee, how is it they're all of a sudden we just kind of turn around, you know, from up here in deep prayer and devotion and humility and service, and then all of a sudden to the other world of envy and anger and so forth. And I've always thought that the real key for us is always to be able to connect the lines of how did I get down here and how can I climb back up? Because in a sense, in theory, I shouldn't be down there. I should always be up here. If I understand Krishna consciousness, if I practice it, if I'm doing things correctly. And how is it that I got down here? And what can I do in Krishna consciousness? And where is understanding lacking or practice lacking that would elevate me there? Because in Krishna consciousness, we remain in goodness. And goodness is the place where there isn't conflict.
But, you know, we all come with different... We all come with different qualities with our karma, the bodies we were born with. And coming to that place of the mode of goodness is not always so easy for some of us. It certainly hasn't been easy for me this time around. It's been really, really hard. You know, and I think if we are not envious of the standard, and we also accept that it is a gradual process, and that if we are, sometimes it isn't that we're doing something wrong. Sometimes it's another level that we're clearing some more things in the heart. Sometimes we're just ready for a higher level of refinement. And those things are coming out because they're ready to be dealt with. And we're on a level, we've committed enough that we want to deal with some of those deeper, heavier issues because they can come quite suddenly.
Well, you know, another interesting thing is, as you say that, sometimes those things are already there. They're always there. But at a certain point, we start to acknowledge that they're there and deal with it.
Yeah, and sometimes the Lord makes arrangements for us to be able to really see them. Maybe we're finally ready to see them and, like you say, and acknowledge them and deal with them.
I think also as one advances, then what one may be seeing is not as serious as one may have thought as a younger devotee. But as you progress, then as the sheet is becoming clean and you're seeing more of the contamination, you become more concerned because you're more concerned with advancing and you're on a higher level, or you feel that you should be over some of these things. So then your reaction may be stronger, but the contamination may be weaker. So we may lose perspective of how we're progressing. It may be a good sign that we're upset about it.
Sometimes the Lord seems to make arrangements for us to stay in prayer and not to think too well of ourselves and just to, you know, we're in this human body. Excuse me, I got stuck. We're in this human body, and one of our monks, Indrajumna Swami, said, no matter how attractive your physical form may be, basically you were wearing a prison suit with stripes, and you have your honorary place in the prison house of this material world because you wanted to enjoy separately from the Lord. So that's how you can look at the situation. So sometimes things come up and we say, oh, you know, there is more there. You know, let me be a little bit humble. You know, I don't really... And Prabhupada even indicated that even if we are making some advancement, it's good to remember where we came from, because it's easy when we, like you were saying, we start to progress a little more toward the mode of goodness. Maybe we're a little more impatient. I've seen that in myself, and I don't like it. I've been impatient, and Prabhupada said it's good sometimes to review where we came from, you know, how we were picked up.
Or like you also said, that sometimes our false ego is such we don't want to acknowledge that we have certain contaminations, and then it gets easier as we progress to embrace them and deal with them and say, okay, this is just where I'm at and what it is, and this is what we have to deal with.
If we're really, really lucky, we'll have people around us who are honest. If we're fortunate, we'll be in the association of, we'll have some company with people who are more spiritually advanced than we are, whose association can lift us up. And, you know, that's how we stay connected. Someone said that once, you know, we have one hand out to those who are helping us and one hand down for those who are coming in the place that we just were. You know, we stay connected like that. But that association is so important, because when we're with people who are aspiring on a higher level, we get encouraged. Because all of us have that lazy streak. You know, we have the standard of going to the morning program at 4:30 in the morning. But, you know, if we're with people, it's a little early. And, you know, you don't have to push too hard and just go later. Or we're with people that tend to speak harshly or they're critical. How will we not get in that mood? You know, so if we are wanting to be in a higher platform, then we have to look at our association as well. It's important.
And Krishna will send the association to help us.
Yeah, definitely.
In the ways we want to be helped. So, we're going to have to end. Bhakti and Carol was asking about motorhome. I know there's a motorhome park. I don't know where it is, but I saw it off the freeway near here. But there are also... I think we can make an arrangement, so just write me. And be so nice to see you all, if you'd like to come for that. And we're also going to do a forgiveness workshop October 31st at the newly founded Bhakti Marg Ashram and Retreat Center.
Where?
Which happens to be on my property.
In your house.
It's in our neighbor's house, but we share a property, and we've created a room where my wife teaches yoga. So on October 31st, it's a Saturday from 10 to 5. We're going to do a full-day workshop. So you could get to come to Alachua twice. Isn't that wonderful? Okay. So if you want information on that, you can also write me and I'll send you information. That's going to be special. Alachua is a special place. So if you need an excuse to come to Alachua, that is a good time. And then in March, we're going to do a Bhakti Marg retreat, which is... I'll have to tell you about that later because this is a surprise. But you all can come. We're arranging so you can all come to Alachua every few months and get out of the cold and say hello to all the nice bugs here. And there are plenty of them to meet. And you can deliver them when you chant your japa in the morning by walking
around. And have the wonderful association of so many elevated souls who have come together.
Kremlin wants to know. There's Jacksonville and Gainesville, airport, two airports. Jacksonville's 90 miles. Gainesville's 60 miles. Gainesville's, 10 miles, 12 miles, 15 miles. Yeah. So just write me and I'll can give you information. And we can all have a wonderful time here. Well, thank you for listening. And we want to thank Harinam.
Thank you.
Let's give her a big applause for coming and sharing with us all her realizations, as I'm sure everyone appreciated. And it was all divine arrangement, and I'm sure she was speaking to the hearts of many of you. And somehow the Krishna inspired me in my heart and inspired her for us to be here. If you're single, Kremlin says he's single, can you come? Kremlin, you got to get married really quick. No, you can come. It's okay. As long as you don't plan to remain a brahmachari all your life, I think you can come. I'll find out. You just write me Write me with that question and I'll find out from Archana Siddhi. If you plan to remain a brahmachari all your life, obviously you wouldn't need to come. Well, thank you all for listening. And we will see you again. Well, at least I will see you again. Well, I don't know if Harinam wants to come back next week.
Hare Krishna.
We can talk. We'll negotiate with her. And thank you, Hare Krishna. Jai. Okay. Go on.